I am Planta on the line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Seth Rudetsky joins me now, the sought-after musical director and Sirius XM radio host, has just published Seth's Broadway Diary, Volume 3, The Inside Scoop on Almost Every Broadway Show and Star. It's a compilation of his onstage and backstage columns from Playbill.com, and they're a marvelous insight into performing with and befriending the theater's biggest stars. He's trusted by a lot of them, and they offer fascinating insights into their career, their work, and the Broadway shows that Mr. Rudetsky has great enthusiasm for. That affection and esteem shine through these insightful columns and in his radio and internet work. His deconstructing videos presented online are done with such reverence that Mr. Rudetsky has done much to elevate the Broadway musical, and they're also just so funny. Seth Rudetsky's work as a music director and pianist include accompanying such stars as Audra McDonald, Andrea Martin, Gavin Creel, Kristen Chenoweth, Patti LuPone, and many more, including Cheetah Rivera, who Seth was conducting for last night in Chicago, where I reached him from. He has been the pianist for such productions as Les Miserables, The Producers, and Ragtime. His Sirius XM show Seth Speaks airs afternoons. He tours regularly with his show Deconstructing Broadway. Disaster was the title of his most recent Broadway musical. He's also written two previous novels, My Awesome, Awful Popularity Plan and The Rise and Fall of a Theater Geek. Visit SethRudetsky.com. This new book is published by Dress Circle Publishing. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Seth Rudetsky. Mr. Rudetsky, good morning.
Hi.
So I'm saying good morning, but I guess you're in Chicago this afternoon.
Yes. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, yeah. We're taping this on Monday. If we'd done this on Friday, as had been planned, you'd have been in Los Angeles, is that right?
Yeah, it's weird. I did this thing called Deconstructing, and I've been a guest in Judd Apatow's show in L.A., and this really nice, wealthy gentleman came to see it with Norman Lear, who I'm a crazy fan of. But anyway, this guy invited me to his, like, kind of office party to deconstruct at his house in Beverly Hills. So I was there over the weekend, and now I'm here in Chicago with Cheetah Rivera doing a show, and then back to New York.
Yeah, and so, I mean, you write that in Seth's Broadway Diary, Volume 3. All this travel that you do, how much time are you on the road as opposed to, say, at home in New York?
Well, I really, really, really try to limit. I probably have a job every 2 weeks out of town or something, but I usually try to get there that morning and then do the show that night and then fly back the next morning. So, I mean, I try to do everything in one day. And if I feel bad, I'll come to cities and people are like, what do you think of our glorious city? I'm like, landed on the airport, did a rehearsal, did the show, and then left. So basically, as far as I know, it's an au bon pain. Like, so that's all I get to see. Anyway, so I do travel a lot, but I really, really, really try to limit it.
You're also late for flights a lot, I noticed.
Oh, how dare you? Oh, yeah, right. You read my book. It's combination of adult ADD. It's mostly adult ADD, and just if you have ADD, like, waiting is so torturous. So getting somewhere and having to wait feels so torturous. So, yeah, especially in Seth's Broadway Diary, in those early volumes, Volume 1, 2, and 3, there are a lot of horrific airport stories. They've all worked out, though, I have to say. I don't think I've ever actually missed a flight, but it's been horrific.
Yeah, you're very lucky in that you're not the last person to board. But, you board right at the time that the plane's supposed to leave, right?
Yeah, it's kind of I guess I'm probably an annoying person to travel with. I mean, like, definitely my husband has been furious at me. Like, we'll get to the airport so late, and he's like, you do this every week. Like, why would you? Like, how would you not know what time we're supposed to leave? I'm like, well, I'm late every week. Anyway, let's just skip over that and talk about Broadway.
You mentioned adult ADD, and what I'm such a fan of yours for is the enthusiasm that you do in these deconstructing videos. I mean, it comes through, too, in your writing online for Playbill.com. You have such an enthusiasm, such a reverence, such an affection for Broadway, At the same time, I'm wondering, where does that come from? I mean, does this, the ADD, does that feed into it, say, how you manage to keep your energy up as you do?
No, I think the ADD just allows me to do a lot of different projects. Mm. That's kind of like a staple of ADD, is that it's easier to do a lot of things than kind of focus on one long project. So definitely ADD helps me, like, the fact I could do the radio show, my column, or, like, write a book, like, that helps me. The enthusiasm is just real. I mean, it's just, I don't know, I really like Broadway, and it's real enthusiasm. Like, someone said to my co-host in SiriusXM, they're like, what's Seth like in real life? And she's like, exactly what you hear on the radio. Mm. Like, I, you know, things that I really like, I'm really enthusiastic about. And things I don't like, I'm also furious about.
Yeah, so when you were at Oberlin, you studied classical music, did you?
Yes, I was a classical piano major, yes.
Yeah, and so, I mean, that obviously teaches you the skills that you need for the line of work that you're in now. But growing up, was Broadway a big deal in your life?
Oh, yeah. I always knew I was going to do Broadway. I just didn't know how I was going to get into college because my grades were so bad, which is sort of part of the adult ADD, too. So, there were theater majors back then, but it kind of wasn't as big of as prevalent as it is now back in the 80s. So I didn't really 100% know I could be a musical theater major. So I didn't really know what I was going to major in school, but I knew that I needed kind of a skill to be able to get into a good school, because based on my grades, I would not get in anywhere. So I knew that I was a good pianist, so I just decided to audition for these schools as a classical piano major. And then I think the first acceptance I got was to Oberlin, which to me was like, it's the number three maybe music conservatory in the country. So once I got in, I was like, oh my God, I have to go. Even though I was never in a million years was going to be, it's so hilarious, I was never going to be a concert pianist. Like, so completely, I never even liked classical music that much. Like, I like it, but not that much. I just was so excited that I got in, and I certainly enjoy music a lot. But it was always going to be Broadway, always, ever since I was a little kid.
Yeah, and so what's it like now? I mean, you mentioned you're working with Cheetah Rivera tonight. To have grown up, say, knowing of her, watching her, say, and now working with her as you do.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I was just posting that today. I wrote something about, like, you know, I'm here in Chicago, and I'm going to do a song from Chicago tonight with Cheetah Rivera. And as I wrote that, I thought, I actually went back, because I thought to myself, I remember when I was a little kid, when Chicago first came out, I think I was 9 in the 70s, late 70s, and I would always say to people, oh, my God, I love Chicago. Do you guys know it? And my parents' friends were always like, Chicago, Chicago. I was like, no, it's a Broadway musical.
Yeah.
But, like, nobody knew it. So I just began to think, I go, God, it was such a big deal to me when I'm a little kid, and it's so crazy that I get to actually play the song for Cheetah now. So it still does hit me how crazy it is that I'm basically living out, like, you know, all my dreams from when I was a kid, like, just to get to see these big stars do their songs live. I mean, those are the stars I mean the most. Like, when I get to play for, like, Andrea McArdle, and I've done a lot of benefits with her. I'm actually doing one coming up. When I get to have her do something from Annie, like, all these shows that meant so much to me on vinyl that I get to actually see the performances live, it still is a very big deal to me. So it's a fun life.
Yeah, and I noticed in reading your work that they confide in you. And they, I mean, they tell you stuff that you probably ask them about that you're interested in, but while this book is dishy and fascinating in that regard, I mean, you're pretty tasteful. I mean, if they tell you something, say, off the record, I mean, you pretty much honor that, don't you?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever, maybe once, I didn't realize it was off the record, but I think I'm really good about. I mean, like, look, BB, I think it was BB Newworth said, like, you know, Seth gets you to tell things you never would tell in public.
Yeah.
So I don't reveal anything they didn't want to reveal, but perhaps they reveal more than they would naturally reveal because they're with me. So I just, and that happens all the time. Like, just recently someone, I said to some celebrity, I name dropped something. They were like, how do you know that? How do you know that? I'm like, you told me.
Yeah.
Like, and by the way, in public, like, just people, I think because I don't think it feels the same to them as being interviewed by an interviewer, because I actually do work on Broadway, so I'm, quote, unquote, one of the gang. I think that they just sort of think of me as, like, a friend, so they reveal a lot more. So, yeah, I don't think I've ever mortified someone, but I certainly don't sugarcoat things. You know, I really try to tell things like they really are on Broadway, but I think Broadway's really fun and positive. I mean, there's this whole, like, myth that Broadway's all cutthroat and horrible, but I think it is. I mean, there are bad things that happen, but, you know, there are a lot of good things that happen. I guess there's a delicious balance.
I guess all the delicious stuff will be for the memoir later on, right?
Oh, I mean, the really dishy stuff?
Yeah.
You know, I think the only negative really things I have to say are not only about ever the actors or the writers, it's the higher-ups, you know, unfortunately people that I don't particularly think have much talent. They're really just business people under the guise of people in power, and they're the people that have the worst stories about the people that actually aren't skilled. And that's what makes me crazy. I'm like, why do the unskilled people have so much power, but the skilled people don't?
Yeah.
You know, the writers and the actors, who I think are all great, they're really at the mercy of business people. And that, and, you know, I'll sort of, I guess I'll save my vitriol for them later, but yeah, whatever. Basically, don't get me, hashtag don't get me started.
Now, I mean, that's what we've been hearing, those of us who follow Broadway from elsewhere, that it is, well, I guess all major theater across this continent is now run by these big corporations and such. Does that make the work less fun, say? I mean, when you don't have, say, the mom and pop producers that or they weren't really mom, like David Merrick, for example, was not.
No, they were kind of mom and pop.
Yeah, sort of. But
you know, look, yeah. I mean, they were all. I mean, look, David Merrick was basically a horrible person from all accounts. I never had anything to do with him, and he was, you know, I guess people that don't know, it used to be there was a producer of a show. There was one big producer. He would get investors, and he was very artistic. But there were horrible ones like David Merrick who put on great shows. He was like extremely mean to people. And then there were like really wonderful, generous ones like Hal Prince.
Mm-hmm.
And that's definitely changed. There's no longer one person in charge. You know, I think in the long run, though, I guess what I'll say is that in the long run, I think artistry still basically wins out, because all these corporate producers can keep trying to produce these shows that scientifically seem like they're going to be a big hit, like, you know, like, let's take a famous movie and turn it into a musical.
Yeah.
But basically, if they're not well done, they don't become hits, whereas artistic projects often do. For instance, you know, Hamilton and Dear Evan Hansen and Come From Away shows that aren't necessarily being written to be hits, that are just being written to be artistic, in the long run, they rise to the top. And a lot of the shows that are written just to make money still haven't succeeded. And yet, corporate producers still don't realize that. They keep trying to take these movies. Now, by the way, certain movie titles are amazing. I mean, I think Hairspray is fantastic. It's not like every single movie turned into a musical is not going to be good. It's not true. But just to do something based on this will make money is idiotic. Somebody even just said that to me recently. They're like, oh, we should write something together, because, you know, this, and this is really selling now. And I was like, I'm never going to write something because it's quote unquote selling. I'm completely not interested in that. So, look, Broadway is still, I mean, Avenue Q, I mean, there's still lots of little shows that become worldwide hits. So, I mean, things have definitely changed. There's so much money now on Broadway. It's so crazy expensive to produce a show, and it never, ever used to be that way. So that's the really bad part, that there are less risks, fewer risks being taken because of that.
Uh-huh.
But there's still these artistic gems that are mega hits, and I think it's always going to stay that way.
Now, New York City, like most big cities, I mean, I'm talking from Vancouver, and I mean, it's the same thing here, that there's just so much money from elsewhere coming in that it's making it affordable. Now, what's it like in the creative community there in New York? I mean, do you find people are fleeing because it's just too bloody expensive?
Oh, yeah. I mean, 100%. I mean, especially because, you know, apartments are now just being bought by, like, businesses, not even, like, by people. It's, like, just, you know, just so they have apartments in the city. Yeah, I guess just new places will continue to be discovered. Like, you know, I work a lot in Provincetown, and that's in my book, too.
Yeah.
Just diary. I do this whole Broadway series, and when I began going there 20 years ago, it really was, like, just a fun vacation spot, and it was really artistic, and now it's, like, it's gotten very, very wealthy and much more expensive. Like, wealthy people keep discovering the enclaves. And I think, you know, New York was a really cool, hip, artistic place. A lot of neighborhoods were, and now all these artistic neighborhoods keep being taken over by really wealthy people. It keeps changing. I mean, you can't fight City Hall. I mean, like, I guess I don't really know how it's ever going to change. I think it's always going to be that way. But just on a total side note, I love Vancouver. I did Forever Plaid there, like, 20 years ago. And, oh, my God, I love that city. So just side note, love Vancouver.
Yeah, I read that in the book, and I'm wondering, do you remember what the audiences were like? I mean, were we sophisticated for the theater here in this town?
I don't even remember if I performed the show. I don't think I did. I think when I was sort of the music supervisor, so I would go to all these different cities and set up the show.
I see.
And teach it to the show. So I don't think I ever played it, but I just loved being there. I just thought it was so crazily gorgeous, like being in Amsterdam. But, I mean, I don't know. The whole theory about audiences, like, I don't buy it. It's like, every audience is the same. Everybody wants, You know, here's the thing. Like, I'm actually writing a show right now about community theater. Hmm. I'm writing a play about community theater. And this whole theory, like, our New York audience, like, look, a New York audience comes to a Broadway show for the first year, and after that, it's the same audience as the community theater. It's audiences from all over the country. So this theory that there's this, like, you know, really savvy audience, or certain cities are more savvy, I just think, I don't know, I think every city has really artistic people that love shows. And anyway, so I don't think there's any particular difference between a Vancouver audience and a New York audience. I think people just want to be entertained, and I don't know. I think they're the same everywhere. I've done my show all over the country. Speaking of Canada, I did my show in Red Deer, Canada, and that audience was amazing. You probably think of it as a small town audience, but I don't know. They were fantastic.
Yeah. And so you're encouraged that Broadway remains relevant wherever you go.
Yeah, Broadway really does. I mean, there definitely was a dip, and definitely the movie Chicago changed a lot. It made Hollywood go, oh, it turns out musicals are cool again. And, you know, shows like Glee, which I didn't really approve of, I really cannot stand lip syncing, I can't stand auto-tuning, and that show was just rife with it.
Yeah.
It still made people, at least they did really cool Broadway songs. I mean, they would do like these really obscure Broadway songs, and I thought that was so great. So just Broadway has definitely gotten much more into the zeitgeist over the last 15 years.
Yeah. So when you're in New York and you're at home, say, with James and your daughter, how many nights are you out at shows or at clubs watching, say, performances as opposed to working? I mean, it seems like living in New York, knowing the people that you do, doing the work that you do, that you're out every night. Are you?
No, I don't think I am. No, I'm definitely a homebody. And I see Broadway people all the time. I mean, you know, there's a lot of stuff during the day that I'm doing Broadway-wise. I probably have, like, one benefit a week in New York or so, and I have to see probably at least one Broadway show a week.
Uh-huh.
But that's just the night. I mean, during the day, there's just, I don't know, I feel like I'm always at my radio show or, like, I have rehearsal for something. There's a lot of Broadway going on every single day, but I wouldn't necessarily say it's at night. I mean, maybe a little bit more so now, but when she was younger, you know, it was much harder to leave the house.
Yeah.
So we were at home a lot. But there's definitely tons of Broadway every single day, but I don't know if it's about the actual time of day.
I was going to ask you what the best, because you live in New York, you work on Broadway, the best New York song. And I have the Company cast recording on my iPod. And I've loved it for years. And then I watch you deconstruct another 100 people online. And, it makes me appreciate the song a lot more. And I'm wondering, as someone who lives in New York, is that sort of the quintessential New York song for you?
It's a little bit, it's cold, but it's an amazing analysis. And it's very cool to think it was 1970. But, oh my God, the city was like that even back then. It's a brilliant song. It's a cold version of New York. It's not really about the artistry and the look, because yes, it is that. But there's so much artistry, there's so much creativity, and really, it's a very small town. I mean, I cannot tell you how often you run into your friends in New York City, like in a small town. You're constantly. Every time I'm out of the house, I run into a friend. And another 100 people is not about that at all. Another 100 people is about kind of disassociating from people. So it sums up New York in a lot of ways, but it's also not really true. New York is, I think, is a very small town. It feels that way to me. You see Broadway stars just traveling with you, like at Stephen York on the subway. Like, you just kind of, everyone is very equal, as opposed to L.A., where everyone is in their car and avoiding each other. So another 100 people is not quite accurate. I think it's a much warmer place than that.
Yeah. Well, what song does it for you say?
Oh, my, that sums up New York?
Yeah.
I don't know. Native New Yorker? I'm a native New Yorker. It's an old 70s. Disco hit.
I think
it's really, I like it. It's sort of, it's very down and dirty. So yeah, I love 70s music, as you know, for my show Disaster. I'm obsessed. Yeah. So that's the first one that came to me.
Yeah. You mentioned in the book all your friends and all these people that you've worked with. Is there someone that you haven't met yet that you'd like to? Because it seems like you've met everybody.
Yeah, that's nice to say. I mean, I'd like to work closer with certain people. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I met Barbara Streisand, and she came to see my show in L.A., and it was a crazy experience to have her there in the audience as I deconstructed her. But I've never actually done a show with her, so I would flip out to be able to really deconstruct her music with her. So 100% Barbra Streisand, but I mean, that's like the top of the heap. You know, and then pop-wise, completely obsessed with Stevie Wonder, and I met him. I did a big Hillary Clinton fundraiser last year, and he was there, but I've never, you know, I want to work closer with people, yeah, even though I've just met them. And then even Angela Lansbury, I did like one event with her, but I've never done like a full show. And I just did the Carabinette 50th anniversary TV show, but yet again, I never really got to sit down with her for an hour. So it's more just gradations of levels of people that I really want to work closer with. But I like the way I've been able to do with Cheetah and, you know, with Audra, like, you know, with people I've really gotten to delve into their careers. I'd like to do that with more people. Like Ben Platt, I just wrote to Ben from Dear Evan Hansen, and we're talking about doing these type of shows together. I've never done one with him. I mean, it's a different story when they're 24 years old like him, because it's not about this whole scope of a career. It's more just about, like, getting to know them and doing music. But I always, you know, so I'd like to do it with him, but I more enjoy doing it with people that have been in the business for, like, you know, 30 years, and I could really go over their whole past career. Angela Weber, I've never met Angela Weber, and I'm a crazy Cycle fan of his, so I would love, love, love to meet him, and then also to work with him.
Yeah. You mentioned Audra McDonald a moment ago. 6 Tony Awards. I mean, is she someone who 50 years from now they'll be talking about, like, say, Ethel Merman or Mary Martin from a previous generation?
I don't know. You know what's different about Audra is that she hasn't really created necessarily an iconic Broadway role. She didn't have a song yet, you know. And there's a story, I don't know if it's in one, I don't know which one of my diaries it's in, but Andrew McArdle was doing a show with Carol Channing, and Jerry's Girls, and Andrew was complaining that they were making her sing Tomorrow at this one benefit, and Carol was like, you know, you're so lucky, you have a signature song, like, when you win your Tony Award, they'll know what song to play when you come on stage. Like, it's such a big deal to have a signature song. And Andrew was like, oh my God, you're right. And Audra doesn't really have one yet. So Audra is this workhorse that is, like, kind of the quintessential Broadway star, but she's not necessarily associated. I think she still has just further to go on Broadway. I think it's going to be amazing when she's created a role with a signature song. But the role that she's created, like Ragtime, I don't think people know Your Daddy's Son. I mean, it's a great song, but it's not like people are like, you know, oh my God, that's your theme song.
Yeah.
A lot of her, she's won Tonys for revivals, for Porgy and Bess at the Carousel and Raisin in the Sun. So, yes, I think they're always going to talk to her about her 50 years from now, because just her, her video performances that we're all able to see, and her recordings. But I still think she has to go to the next level and get a signature song, and that hasn't happened yet. But the good news is she still sounds amazing, so I'm sure it's in her future.
Yeah. What's it look like? Because when you read Seth's Broadway Diaries, you see, you know, little notes that you make, I guess, in the present day, looking back at, say, 5 years ago, because the years covered in this are 2011 to 2015. What's it like to look back at your life in these years ago? I mean, in this time you also got married, right?
Yeah. Right now, it feels good. I mean, I do think about when I'm, I do think about not a, like, what's going to be like when I get older. Like, I remember this older guy I was talking to, he once said, oh, I really miss picking up my paycheck from work on Friday and running to the bank and depositing it. Because I'm older than do that. And I think to myself, I'm like, I may be just taking for granted right now, like, just flying all over the country and doing shows and blah, blah, blah. And I wonder if I'm going to look back when I'm older and go, oh, my God, I didn't appreciate how amazing this is. So right now, when I look back at it, it just feels like I'm looking back on my life right now. Like, it doesn't seem any different. I don't feel like, oh, my God, this was 5 years ago. I think, oh, yeah, this is just another day of my life.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten to the point where I look back and I'm in a full depression. So hopefully I won't be in a full depression when I get older. But that's, I think about that. I think, God, what's going to be like when I'm older and I'm not doing all these amazing artistic things? And then just in terms of, like, let's say time period, it's fun. It's fun. Well, the most fun for me is things I've forgotten about. Like, you know, I just forgot about certain really funny things that happened with Broadway stars. Like, so many funny stories, like I don't know if you read, but the Daniel Radcliffe, when I took a picture with him and I didn't realize I had concealer all over my face, so I literally had just these crazy white circles around my eyes.
Yeah.
It was mortified, but I completely forgot that I experienced that with him. And, you know, that's what's really fun, is reading stories. I don't really realize that I am actually keeping a diary. Like, to me, it's just an assignment, a place I like to write about my Broadway happenings. When I look back, I'm like, my God, this is amazing. I have like a week-to-week diary of all these really fun Broadway events that happened in my life. So it's enjoyable for me to look back at it. It's not really filled with any emotion, per se.
Yeah, it is an enjoyable book to read, because it makes you want to, first of all, go to the city And it's just an exciting life that you lead, and one that I'm sure a lot of people envy. I do have to ask, if there is someone that you had to name that you worked with or encountered that was just a nightmare, is there one that comes to mind?
Is there someone that was a nightmare to work with? Well, if I'm racking my brain like this, I don't know. People have done nightmarish, annoying things.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I have any, the one annoying thing that happened to me, I guess if I'm really going to dish a celebrity, is like Susan Sarandon, I think it was her, like tweeted me and was like, come to my pool club. She like wrote me a direct message and probably was like, is this her assistant writing me? But I guess it was her because I sort of made a joke and I said, oh, you should do musicals again like Rocky Horror, and she's like, oh, I'm a bass now. And then I went to the pool club and she completely basically ignored me. And I was like, first of all, I hate pool. I only came because you invited me and you're acting like I'm bothering you. Like, it was really weird.
Yeah.
So that's the only kind of like dishy off the top of my head celebrity story. I was like, I dragged myself here. I completely minded sitting in the pool. I kind of just did it because I was like, oh, this would be nice because they're having like a Broadway night or a pool place. And then it was a lot of like where I walked over to her and she like refused to turn to look at me, where I had to like just keep standing there for like 6 minutes, like waiting for what she was acknowledge I was standing there. So anyway, if I'm gonna dish anybody, I guess that's the story that comes to mind.
So when you do work with someone and it's a less than ideal experience and say you're a fan of theirs, does that change how you view their work later on?
I don't think that's ever happened. I don't know.
Because I interview people all the time, and sometimes when you interview people that you really like and then they turn out to be, well, not so pleasant, I mean, it does sort of, you know, I mean, I guess every fan is like that, though, right?
I think it's more the opposite. I think if I don't like somebody's work, I'm annoyed at them as a person. It's more that, where I don't know if I really met people I don't like. It's more the opposite. There's certain, like, you know, people that I think work a lot, maybe more some directly, but I just think I just get very irritated that they keep being asked direct stuff. And they're more like, I'll be annoyed at them as people. And then when I meet them in real life, they're really friendly, and it's hard for me to reconcile. I'm like, oh, I'm irritated at the artistic output you're doing. Like, how dare you be a nice person? It's more the opposite. I don't think I really met people that bother me so much.
Yeah.
You know, even though, by the way, I'm constantly irritated. I mean, listen, I'm acting like I'm the same, but I'm constantly irritated at everybody.
Yeah.
But it's a low-level irritation.
Yeah,
it's
not
like, I mean, I'm... But that's a different sect of Jewish in me. Like, I'll be furious for 1 minute and then, like, fine the next minute. So I'm not saying, like, I like everybody, but I don't think I particularly have long-term people that I don't like.
And I guess, you know, that speaks to you as an artist, because you're a fellow artist. You know how hard it is to do this stuff.
I think it's a great book on Spider-Man about putting the Spider-Man musical on Broadway, which everyone made fun of. But when you read the book, you kind of see everyone was really just trying to do their best. It just didn't work out. But I think there's this view that people are trying to pull a fast one or whatever, and it makes you kind of dislike them as artists. But then when you really kind of see the behind the scenes of why these mistakes happen, it humanizes them and you feel better. So even the people that I dislike that have bad output on Broadway or producers that irritate me, usually when I meet them, they're nice, and it's hard for me to stay furious at them.
Yeah. And we've talked about this already, but, I mean, I'd like to end on this. I mean, this career that you have, this life that you have, I mean, I don't know if you could have imagined this growing up, but, I mean, this is the sort of life that you wanted, right?
Yes. But there's always more. But no, 100% of the life I wanted. Are you kidding me? Like, getting to basically my favorite thing is talking about Broadway with people. So the fact that I get to do these shows where I sit with these Broadway stars and ask them really fun questions about their careers, and then I get to make them sing what I want them to sing, it's exactly what I always wanted. Like, I always wanted to be able to sit with Patti LuPone and say, and now sing Rainbow High from Evita in the original key and have her do it. So 100%, that is what I always dreamed of. But it doesn't mean there are not a lot of other things that I still want to be doing. It doesn't mean I'm satisfied. I'm never really satisfied, but definitely getting to do those things is exactly what I dreamed of doing when I was a kid.
Well, long may it continue. I'm a fan. Oh, by the way, Elaine Stritch. I'm fascinated with her. I mean, I've seen, you know, the At Liberty thing on DVD, and I've watched the documentary. Yes. Did you have any encounters with her?
Yes. Very, 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 very few. But the one that I had, there's a big benefit every year called the Easter Bonnet Competition, mm-hmm. which is like the Gypsy of the Year competition for Broadway Cares, 75 Days, and all these Broadway shows put on sketches and numbers to raise money for Broadway Cares 75 Days. So it was a big coup one year. They asked me to write the opening number. I'd never done it before. I think it was around 26. And I wrote this opening number. It had to be about the Easter bonnet, so it had to be something about hats. So I wrote hats, glorious hats.
Yeah, yeah.
And the very, very end, and by the way, there was a young upstart choreographer doing it with me named Kathleen Marshall. It was like our first big thing we did together. Anyway, at the very, very end, we asked Elaine Stritch to come out and say, does anyone still wear a hat?
From Company, yeah.
That's kind of the final button.
Yeah.
Yeah, from Company, her big line. And she's just a really, well, she's passed away, but a really smart performer. She could have just come out and been like, does anyone still wear a hat? But she came out, and I still don't know why, with an overcoat and a handbag and gloves. And she came out, everyone, like, spotlight hits her, and of course, everyone's laughing because they kind of know what's coming.
Yeah.
And then she just slowly took off a glove, and she's like, does anyone? Slowly put the glove in her bag. Still wear. Start taking off the second glove. It was this really bizarre bit, but she was so smart because it just, she needed business to fill the time of saying that line, and it was just great. You can actually watch it. It's on YouTube. I posted it on my YouTube channel.
Oh, really? Yeah.
That was my experience. You know, she just knew how to make something even funnier.
And they, I'm sure they went crazy with the minute that she walks out like that, right?
Oh, my God. And it was a lot of her, like, looking, you know, does anyone? Then she would look at the box seats, look at the other box seats, look at the guy. I mean, yeah, she, like, milked it into, like, a 10-minute moment. Yeah, yeah. She was a brilliant performer.
Seth, this has been such a delight for me to talk to you. As I said, I'm such a fan, and this book is just a wonderful read. I hope a lot of people pick it up. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. I loved it. Bye-bye.
The book is called Seth's Broadway Diary, Volume 3, The Inside Scoop on Almost Every Broadway Show and Star. It's published by Dress Circle. SethRudetsky.com, of course, is the website. For more, Seth Rudetsky, join me on the line from Chicago and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.